But now you've got this little seed of doubt, you end up projecting it onto the other person, and they start to, because they're unconscious in the first birth, they tend to pick up that projection, reflect it back on you, and so you actually program them unconsciously to.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the You versus You podcast, where I talk with members of the Council for Human Development about how we can expand our minds and recode reality. Today, you will experience a different format. You will listen to a conversation between me and Karen Frost focused on relationships. We'll touch upon topics like differences in thinking between men and women, how to complete yourself before entering a relationship, how to overcome the patterns from your past and establish trust, and finally, how to overcome the fear of rejection. So please enjoy. Can you elaborate on some of the fundamental differences in thinking between men and women that are key to understand, in your opinion?
Women have a habit of thinking men are tall, dark, and handsome, the ones they find attractive. And if in reality, men are tall, dark, and thick, and women haven't worked that one out, which might sound rather kind of nasty, but it's true. Men think in a different way. They, in the consciousness alphabet, they have A, B, and C, but don't realize or even sometimes accept that the rest of the alphabet exists. Women have the whole alphabet, but they get a bit muddled up where the letters go. So what they tend to do is try to center around a man who is kind of more solid sometimes, and they're more practical, and they can change a light bulb, basically, which is their main use. But, you know, basically, it doesn't work like that. It's for a woman, she's trying to get a man sometimes. She's trying to project onto a man. When she meets a man she finds attractive, she'll project, like a man does to a woman, project all the values that we think that person should have. So we have this immediate projection, you know, oh, find him attractive. We don't care about asking any decent questions. And a lot of women and men, after 10 years, don't have any basic understanding of the partner that they've been with. They, you know, there used to be a series back in the 70s called Mr. and Mrs., where two people went on there and the husband was asked what the, you know, in private, what the woman thought, his wife of many years, and then they would reverse it around to see whether the questions were right. Simple questions like, what color does she like? Where's her favorite place? You know, simple things like that. And not any depth. And the amazing level of actual understanding was revealing in the fact it was virtually nothing. So ultimately, you find that people don't ask themselves deeper questions. They project onto the other person. So what happens is if you're attracted to the person, the dopamine and the drug goes into the head, you're all happy and everything's wonderful. And then after a period, the drug dries up a little bit and you start to look at the person and they weren't the person that you met, really. Because you're now seeing not the projection, you're seeing the reality coming forward. And then after 10 years, a woman will often say to her husband, you're not the man I met. And he says, well, I was never that man, because ultimately, you projected onto me what you wanted to me, and I just tried to be that. But I was always trying to be what you wanted, not what I really am. And this is the inconsistency. There is another aspect to it as well, not just from male to female, but, you know, understanding how a male's brain works and how they're practical and how they're limited in certain ways. And for a man trying to understand that a woman doesn't always say what she means because she wants the man to try to decode it in some way so she feels that she's of value to him and that he's taken the time. This goes back to when we did the, in the nursery rhymes and stuff like that, where the man fights through the thorns and he rescues the girl from the tower. So often in relationships, the woman will return to the tower so the man can fight through the thorns to rescue her again. Man hasn't got a clue what's going on, frankly, but he's always looking around seeing, you know, I thought there was a dragon involved in this nursery rhyme, but it doesn't seem to be here. What he hasn't realized is the dragon is hiding inside the woman. And therefore, when he rescues her, he takes the dragon home as well. And then the dragon of resentment comes out, because if a woman doesn't get what she feels that she needs from the guy, she might project onto the guy the fact the more she loves him, the more she can resent him in some way, in the fact that he has caused her to love him, but he doesn't honor that love. For the man on the other side, he goes, oh, you were really desirable when I first met you, and I was climbing, but now you've gone too dutiful, and the man will not find dutiful attractive. And then a woman may go to doormat, so the man is basically getting what he wants and he will not respect her at that position. So what a woman fails to realize a lot of the time, she bags her fish, shall we say, but then she goes into the dutiful role of serving her fish. And that is a recipe for disaster when it comes to a fish dish. You have to keep the man climbing. If you don't keep the man climbing, then he will just start, he's lazy. He just starts accepting that he's won the girl, and he starts not, you ask the guy, when was the last time you gave your wife flowers? Oh, maybe 6 years ago. You go, that's regular. But when you go to the beginning of the relationship, there's all this passion, there's poetry, there's love, there's flowers, there's everything, and it's reciprocal. But what happens after a period is you get this trading situation, and especially when it comes to sex, the woman starts to go, hang on a minute, it was all great, but ultimately, you're kind of getting what you want, but I'm not really, those other things aren't being serviced, those other needs aren't being serviced, and sometimes I'm not feeling respected in certain ways. And that's when the dragon of resentment starts to come up. That's when the relationship starts to go into this maybe downward circle where two people start to drift apart. I don't know if that waffled on too much.
And you said that one of the major problems is that you start projecting onto someone and you don't really understand their deep belief system and their values. So How can we really change that and find out what it is?
It's asking better quality questions. You know, when people go on a first date, they actually, I think statistically, I don't know if it's true because I've never been on a first date and counted these things, but ultimately they lie between 40 and 60 times on a first date.
Can you give us some of the examples of what are good quality questions to ask?
I'll give you good quality lies if you want. Good quality lies is how do you like me? Yeah. Things like, what do you do for a living? I'm an Air Force fighter pilot. No, you're not. You're just lying to get the girl where you need to get her. But the girl wants to project. And if she really finds the guy attractive, she won't want disappointment. So she won't ask the questions necessary that could really lead to disappointment if she finds the truth. So ultimately, we end and spend the time with the person in denial, trying not to believe all the real core insights that we have inside. What I mean by that is we've got these little intuitions coming up saying, well, no, this isn't right and this isn't right. We go, oh, no, that story, it doesn't matter. I love him. I love him. I love him. And then you keep the little things keep floating up. You go, no, I don't. These are the problems. People don't ask the questions. They don't want to know the answers. Women are not just women, but it's also men. We can't really say just women because men have a female and male polarity. Women have a female and male polarity. So we're talking very generally here. So we can't, because a lot of people listening will go, well, that's not me. I'm not this. But then again, having said that, you're in the first birth and you don't actually know what you are. You just think you know what you are and you haven't worked out who you really are. So that's the real problem. There is one other thing that's very important to be aware of, is people often go, oh, I want, you know, it's a bit like the old film, I don't know if you know it, with Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire and Renée Zellweger. He says, you complete me. And, you know, a lot of people go into a relationship with going, I want someone to complete me. They've got a kind of big hole in them. And they go, I need this person to tell me, you fill that hole. It's a bit like selling a car and going to someone and saying, look, I've got a three-wheel car here. Don't worry that one wheel's missing. It's perfectly okay. Now, the buyer's going to go, no, I want four wheels on the car, mate. That's what I want. But what we do is, in those lies, we try to deceive and say, really, I'm looking for someone to fill that hole when that hole should be filled. Now, how do you fill the hole? Well, that's self-love. And a lot of people say, well, I'm working on that. And so when you go and find someone that you find attractive, basically you're taking something that's not complete. You're taking something, asking them to complete it and fix it. And that's not really good for a relationship. It would be far better if you went into a relationship where you actually completed yourself first and then said, okay, this is what I've got to trade. And that's where it all goes wrong a little bit. Again, because what you find with men and women, energetic forces tend to attract similar kinds of things. So the guys are not complete, the women are not complete, and they're trying to complete each other with the other. And you're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole half the time. And so you both get a little bit fed up after the drug's gone off from the head, and then that's relationship over.
And how can you complete yourself before you start something?
Now you're asking the deeper questions. the deeper, yeah. How can you complete yourself? Well, there is a process of completion to complete yourself. And if any of you are familiar with the work of a guy called Abraham Maslow, you'll be aware that there's a ladder of needs, which are four deficit, and then four aspirational, and these lead up to level eight. So, you know, this is one something called self-actualization. And it's really, a lot of people will say, oh, I am self-actualized. And you go, well, yeah, you're in the first birth, so you won't know what it is. You do not know what you do not know. And this is a natural growth thing for human beings. We grow up as a child, we turn into an adult, but that is the mind and the body. And we get a job and we think that we've grown up, no more school, nothing like that. But then life turns out to be a learning lesson. And really, it's the frame of mind that you're in. If you're in the first birth, then it's going to be a painful learning lesson until such time as you accept that you've got to grow more. Then you've got to go back to scratch and say, okay, who am I? What am I? What do I believe? What do I think? And then you ask yourself the question, why do I believe this? Why do I think it? Who does it serve? Is it positive? Is it progressive? You've really got to go back to the core of you and not keep laying on ideas on almost what we call a shell identity. So if you've got the core identity, which is your true limitless nature, where you self-love without question, you know everything about everything and you're just happy every day. Okay, that's core. All right. Now, from the age of five, that's been eroded from you. So by the time you're 31, you're 40, you know, you've got this shell identity that's trying to project onto the world what it thinks the world needs to give it for it to be happy. Yet the shell identity is an amalgamation of what it's adopted unconsciously across life and hasn't worked and thinks it's it. So we're a reflection of lots of things like what our parents have told us, culture, religion, education, sibling, employmental, governmental, social. All these things have created this like layers of an onion. And really, we then go out into the world and go, okay, I was working for the late, I'm not saying her name actually or anything like that, but she's kind of like in her late 60s and I'm working on dating with her. Okay, and she's going, I think for women in their 60s, you'd think they'd know a bit about dating. And she certainly has been through a few relationships and nothing wrong with that. But ultimately, they've not worked out. But she has a shopping list of what she wants a man to be before she feels she wants to enter into a relationship. Now, I love the word relationship because it sounds like there's the two of you getting on a boat together, a ship, and going to sail together. And if you don't agree on that ship, then you basically bail. And that's really, there's like three in the relationship. There's you, the other party, and there's the relationship. It's not a really nice way of putting it because really, if you want soul love, which is what most women and actually men are looking for, they're looking for someone that they can really trust and really value. And they really can be passionate with those people and fall in a very deep sensual love. And that is on an energetic field. And if you asked a guy about what's an energetic field, he'd probably say that's a Duracell battery. He's not going to know what you mean. And really, a lot of women don't know what the energetic field is. But, you know, some people call it chemistry. But when you it's not just the chemistry. It's like an electromagnetic field that we as human beings give off. And with some people, it's got this deep resonance. It's just amazing. And some people have written about it in the past. It's about looking into the eyes of eternity when you look into this person's eyes. But you're looking into their soul. You're not looking into the identity that is the shell identity that is now projecting onto the world what it needs. You're actually catching a glimpse of the core. And you can be drawn into that. You can fall in love with it. But really what's between you and it is this shell. And the shell will maybe even reject you, maybe have affairs with other people, maybe not get its needs met by you. And you feel bad because you failed in that. But ultimately, you're having a relationship with a shell, not the core. What you're feeling and being drawn to is a magnetic field of that core soul. And that can be incredibly addictive, by the way, far more than the dopamine. The dopamine lasts around about, you know, when that drug goes into the head, the love drug, they call it. You know, I think it's dopamine. I can't even remember. I'm not a chemist. But it's certainly something that goes into a certain gland in the head. And, you know, I'm a psychologist. So it tends to twist your ideas and everything's rosy and the world becomes highly colorful and you're happy. You know, it's like a happy drug. But you, and then when you see the person, you get happier every minute. You go, I'm happy. You know, please come here. Let's just do. And it's, you know, every minute, everything else is irrelevant. Work goes out the window. Business goes out the window. It's just, oh, I'm happy. And then after, but everything has a beginning, a middle and an end. So that drug can only be there for a period. That's not soul love. Soul love, that's heavy. That's where it can last years. You become complete, you know, because you've looked into the core, you've now took a glimpse of what really both you and the other person originated in on an unconscious level. You know, you can't, well, it's not conscious. You can't go, oh, there's the universe in there. You just feel it, and it affects you, and it affects every cell in your body. So you become completely subservient to this in a way. It just takes over. And that can really ruin people's lives because they can't work out why the shell, they're really loving this soul, but the shell identity is so poorly constructed because of the unconscious adopted patterns that they can't work this out. And that can be even in an abusive relationship where the guy's soul is part of that greater consciousness and they've taken a glimpse of that. But the outside shell is someone maybe even beats them, maybe even abuses them in lots and lots of different ways. And they can't quite rationalize the two. And that's a very difficult situation to be in, quite uncomfortable. And that can lead to codependency in certain ways and stuff like that. There we go.
And you mentioned that when you meet someone, you really need to establish trust and you need to trust them. How can you do that, especially if you have some baggage from the past? It can be really hard to really trust someone.
It can be. Is it hard to trust someone? In the first identity, yes, because you can't work out who they really are. And you've got experience that has damaged you in some way. And when I say damaged, it's given you an adopted learning pattern that's possibly negative. Now, what you're going to get then is you'll probably get a self-fulfilling prophecy and the fact that because you've gone into this new relationship with the damage of something that you picked up in the past, whether that might be rejection from your parents or rejection from a partner or betrayal or any of these things, now you're going to go in there into this new relationship with that as just a little bit of an inkling in your head, a little seed of doubt. And the unfortunate things with seeds of doubt is that they tend to clog the works. If you didn't have it, you wouldn't think about it. Thus, your behavior wouldn't be controlled by it. And you would then be free to love without hindrance. But now you've got this little seed of doubt, you end up projecting it onto the other person. And they start to, because they're unconscious in the first birth, they tend to pick up that projection, reflect it back on you. And so you actually program them unconsciously to be what you're most not looking for. In other words, what you were most looking for, you give to them as a gift, and then they act that out in some way. And you end up going, well, hang on, that happened to me last time. Why is it happening to me this time? So this is all to do with the first identity or the second identity. As I said, in the first identity, you're unconscious. You're not conscious of the way your language patterns and thoughts are programming your own mind. You're not conscious of how they're programming somebody else's mind who's unconscious. And ultimately, you end up with this sort of like thing where I'm afraid I'm going to get hurt, and you go into this shell. And that means if you're in a shell, it's a bit like a knight of, a suit of armor. And if you're in a suit of armor, you can't really get close to anybody because you've always got this armor that you keep clanking up against. And much as you want to get really close, the armor denies you that because it's a protection. I was once working with a girl years ago, and she said to me, look, this was a generalization in her language pattern from previous relationship. Everybody wears a shell. And I said, do they? And she said, yes. And I said, why is that? And they said, well, if you don't wear a shell, people might hurt you. And I said, well, do you think I should wear a shell? And she said, don't you? And I said, not that I know of. So maybe it's a good idea I should. And she said, but you might get hurt. And I said, well, I'm probably going to get hurt sooner or later somehow, because everything has a beginning, middle, and an end. And if I know that, I might as well take the shell off and enjoy everything for the best benefit without worrying about what happens maybe if I get hurt. Because if you worry about getting hurt, you're probably going to have a self-fulfilling prophecy in the fact that you will get hurt. If you don't worry about it, it's probably never going to occur to anybody to hurt you, and they're just going to love you. You know, it's the difference. Because if you wear the shell, you push people away, and therefore they can't get close to you. therefore they can't serve their needs, therefore there's something missing, and therefore they'll find love in somebody else's arms, much as they may love you. They still feel that there isn't as much as that they're looking. These are deficit needs. That you'll blame them, and you'll say, oh, you went off with somebody else, you betrayed me, basically you were mine, I owned you, and you made me love you, and therefore you should spend the rest of your life paying for you making me love you. This is all a little bit low band frequency with. It's all about needs. So in answer to your question, you have to start to look at yourself, look at why you think the way you do, see if your thought is progressive or regressive, see if it's governed by something in the past, a pattern that you've picked up from somewhere, could be an experience or could be something you've heard, and then just decide as to whether you want it. You lay out a white, in your imagination, a white, clean piece of paper and say, do I want that or do I not want it? I'll give you an example. There was a girl called Sophie I was working with some time ago, and she said, can I put on this white sheet of paper social smoking? And I said, okay, it's a white, clean piece of paper. You want social smoking. She says, because I'm smoking a lot, I just want social smoking. I said, yeah. You can put whatever you like on the piece of paper. That's okay. But let's go back to your five-year-old self and ask your five-year-old self if it wants to be a social smoker. And she went back in her head to her five-year-old self and just asked the question. And the five-year-old self says, no, I don't want to grow up to be a social smoker. It's not on my list. I want to be happy. I want to be this. I don't want to be whatever. And she says, no, it's not there. I said, so why then are we putting it on the piece of paper? It's serving a need. What we're doing by smoking is escaping from something. And that's going to be a lack of confidence of certain reason, which is going to be brought about by an experience that created that lack of confidence. Because at a certain time in your life, when you were a child, someone could have stuck you out in front of a football field and you wouldn't have cared. You'd been in your own world. You'd have played with your toys. Total confidence. And if they said sing to everybody, you would have sung. But something's come up between them. So that's what we have to wind you back to so you can find perfect love. Your five-year-old self, and then you can start going, okay, I want another five-year-old self to fall in love with. And that sounds like a perfect match to me.
And what if you have some kind of pattern from the past that is holding you back and it's hard to get over that?
Okay, there was a bit of a language pattern going there. It's hard to get over that. We have these things because we've kind of been programmed by the personal development world to say, I've got these patterns and they keep holding me back. You know, we've got a supercomputer in the back here who's got 40 million bits of data per second and a brain that's working at 40 bits of data per second. So every time we say something or think something, that acts upon it. So if you say, I've got these patterns, the supercomputer goes, we've got some patterns. Are they holding you back? Yes, supercomputer, we better hold you back then. It's not rational. It just gets an instruction like Google. And you just go, here's the instruction. Thank you very much. It's a computer. So to stop your patterns holding you back, you really simply say, I don't have any patterns. And a lot of people in the therapy world will go, no, Kern, you can't say that. You know, that's just too simple. And I go, we've got to take them and regress them back to when they were four and when a toy was stolen off them and all this sort of rubbish. And you go, look, if I bring a lion into the room and it wants to eat you, how long are you going to spend talking to the lion and going, I want to tell you about my formative times when I had one of my toys stolen off me. And the lion's going, I'm not that interested. You just look like lunch. You and your own mind are not going to sit there and give it your backstory. You're going to go, there's the window, there's the door. In a fraction of a second, you're going to be out of one. So your thinking is choice, your choice. All you have to do is start asking yourself better quality questions and then determining as to whether that question gives you the answer that you want. If you say, I'm held back by beliefs, well, that's what's going to happen. And then if you say to yourself, okay, then you could say, well, what are those beliefs? And you go, or experiences, and you go, well, let's say you were betrayed by a man, okay, in some way. You know, let's say he ran off with another woman. Okay, you go, is that all men? and you're going to have to ask the question, well, that's 3.5 billion, over 3.5 billion on the planet all behave in that same way. Yeah, that's going to be a very good protection mechanism from 3.5 billion men to get even closely romantic with you. And you're probably going to end up a little bit disappointed. I'm going to give you a better example of that than that, though. My mother used to say, all men don't want to get married, okay?
Yeah.
This is she expressed it as a belief, okay? And she was expressing this belief when she was 60. So it's gone on for quite a while, okay? It's got a bit of a history to it. She had been married for quite a few years, by the way, for probably around about 40 years. I can't remember. But to trace that belief back, because this is the unconscious self that has never thought through the beliefs. So there's going to be a gain to that belief. And in therapy terms, we're looking for the gain to the belief. So I'm looking for why she's got that. So when she go, you know, she didn't have that when she was a baby, by the way. We know that because babies don't really think about marriage and they don't think. But so it's got to be something that's learned at a position. Now, it's going to be learned not in a positive way, because, you know, because she's framing it in a negative way. So all men don't want to get married. So if she actually meets a man at her age after my father died, she would always start to feel that they didn't want to get married. And that would be the primary thing she talked about. And the men would go, all you ever talk about is the fact that I don't want to get married. Could you please give me a chance to actually decide that for myself before you decide it for me? All right, because she's got a pattern and it's coming out in her language, because her main fear is exposing herself to a man in an emotional way. But that means that she might suffer a rejection in the fact that if she would be in her programming, she's expecting marriage, which is a confirmation that someone cares about her, wants to give her security, love, all these sorts of things. This is a program, by the way, the actual marriage one, but we'll come back to that another day. And then, so she's running that program and it's not being fulfilled. And if it's not being fulfilled, then she's getting a painful feeling. She's feeling that the guy doesn't, he's mucking her about. He's not honest, or he doesn't really love her because he's not supplying that need. The man, on the other hand, is going, as I said, you know, give us a chance, girl. I've just sort of met you and you're now talking about marriage. It's a bit bloody quick. And she said, well, I want to know that you were not mucking me about at the beginning. Otherwise, I'm not going to invest my time. And he's going, well, don't invest your time then, because I need to find out whether you're the right person for me as much as you want to find out that I'm the right person for you. And at the moment, I'm not talking about marriage. I'm just talking about us having a good time and getting on. And marriage is an evolution of that in a romantic sense, not a security sense. So it's the definition of what marriage is, you know? So if the woman's going, oh, you know, you don't want to marry me, that's another program to the unconscious. No, I don't. You just told me I didn't. My supercomputer has just been programmed by you. You know, the more times a woman brings it up, the more times the man goes, remember, the man is only ABC, by the way, so he's not that bright. So he's going, and it's going in the unconscious, not the thinking brain. He doesn't understand what a woman wants or what she doesn't want. He just goes, I'm here. that's it. There isn't a huge amount else. There is more intelligence to a man, and there are more layers. I don't want to do them down too much, but we'll keep it on a very thin bandwidth. So with my mother, for example, where did that thought come from? Well, the day before she was to get married to my father, and he was a little reluctant about getting married, his freedom, all that sort of stuff back then. We're talking about quite a few years ago.
Yeah.
And my mum was quite demanding and annoying. I love a bit to bits, but the day she was rather difficult and a handful for him for most of his life. I think he spent most of the time under the car in the garage trying to fix the car rather than fix his relationship with her. He never wanted a divorce, but it might as well have been. So basically, she, on the night before they got married, my father was obviously expressing some doubt. he was shit scared, in other words. But he was, you know, and guys, funny enough, get nervous. And when we get nervous, we say things that we possibly don't mean because we're nervous. And who are we going to say those things that we don't mean to? The person we value the most, because we want them to reassure us that we're doing the right thing. But, you know, for my mum, she took a game in her own head and said, well, look, if you don't want to get married, that's okay. It's not a problem. We don't have to. I think previous to that, she'd taken off her engagement ring and thrown it at him. But that was on another occasion. But so she noticed there was a reluctance in my father, which he did get married to her. But that constant reluctance set up a pattern, which she felt that my father didn't want to get married to him. So rather than see it as, or think it through, or because there was the pain she didn't want to face, she just created a pattern in herself that all men don't want to get married, which allowed my father to have that particular reluctance.
And what is the pain that she didn't want to face, in your opinion, then?
Always the pain we all don't want to face, which is rejection. And rejection really comes back from our formative understanding. And for a lot of women, it's rejection by the father. If a woman goes through, there's the real cross is between the son to the mother and the daughter to the father. If the father isn't giving her attention in the way necessary, when that mind is forming, then that can form a pattern that isn't super cool. If the father leaves the home, in other words, runs off with somebody else, or there's then that can lead to a number of different issues about men and about how that they might be left at some point and rejected. And the more a woman loves that man, the more threat to pain there might be. And thus she might build a bigger wall that ultimately ends up with the pain created in itself, because the guy can't fulfill his needs by being close to the woman. Not all men, when I say his needs, I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about men are very much, they're energetic forms. They want to feel loved. They want to feel that they're close. They want to feel not beaten up and suppressed all the time, stuff like that. There's a lot of that.
And if someone has that fear of rejection, what's the best way to deal with it and to overcome it as well?
I had this one. And I had a fear of rejection, and it was very much any form of rejection, not just from women. So I decided in my 20s to go to every audition possible. I wasn't an actor, by the way, or a singer or a dancer. So I went to every audition possible in the West End to become an actor, singer, or a dancer, and got rejected by so many people, it's unreal. All I can tell you is it doesn't work. It just gets more painful. You just get more rejection and more rejection, because you're trying to solve a problem going about it the wrong way. To avoid rejection, you have to start working with yourself. As I said, you have to wind yourself back. You have to do something called introspection. Best if you work in guidance on editing your thought and language patterns. This means that you start to reset the computer of your mind, go back to the five-year-old self on a very holistic way. As you know, we run a program that does that, and I'm not wanting to go into that too deep right now, but ultimately, there is no short course to this. If you're in the shell identity, if you're in the first birth, then you're always going to run the risk of rejection, because you're in a non-thinking state, hoping for the best. If you go into the second birth, then you certainly start to become much, much more aware of self and others. So therefore, rejection actually doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter if the person you're with actually runs off with somebody else. It's irrelevant. Because that might sound odd to a lot of people, but you really, if you really truly love someone and they're not getting what they want in life, then surely your love should require you to give them the latitude to find the happiness that they truly want. If you're not capable of giving it, it's that's what that is. That's when you don't mind rejection anymore, because sometimes people are growing at different paces. And what we try to do is create these islands of certainty in the sea of eternity. In other words, we don't want to think about the bigger picture. We just want someone to get on our island with us, agree with us, like minds, and we can spend the rest of our life scratching each other's backs. But what happens when the other person grows a little bit and says, this island isn't cool for me anymore? And the other person says, well, why isn't it? It was okay a few months ago or years ago. And the other person goes, well, I can't tell you why. I just feel like it's, do you want to grow a bit with me? And the other person goes, no, I don't understand why I should. Because one person is in the shell identity and the other one's core is starting to come to the surface. This is why relationships tend to go astray across the years, is because the core is trying to get out. It's the second birth. And the shell is trying to suppress it. And this affects the relationship. So if one is firmly in shell and the other one's core is calling to them, then they're going, I want to get further. And this one's going, well, I don't understand. You're different. Why do we want anymore? We've already had it. We've been happy together. And the other one's going, well, I can't tell you why. I just need to have more answers. But this is the growth of the human identity. It's natural. But in our society, we're a bit pinned, because we meet someone at 21, 22, 25. We fall in love. We get married. We have kids. And that's it until we die. That's the theory, because we've got a contract that we've got to honor. And this isn't super cool when it comes to growth as a human being. What we say is, look, we're going to give up our own personal growth as a human being to supply, to be a valued member of society, an honorable husband or wife, even though it's causing us problems. And then you get the thing is, well, yes, relationships, they're always hard. And you've got to go through the good times and the bad. And this is incredibly true. But you've got to take it into context. that it's you, it's your life. You're meant to be here to grow for a reason. There is a meaning, purpose, and destiny to your life. And sometimes it's trying to balance that and say, okay, I'm in a position that has taken me so far, and now I need to come out of that, rather than keep beating yourself up that you're just not doing the right thing. You're not conforming as society wishes. You're not honoring the love words that you said some years ago. And you're trying to hide from the very fact that you've just fallen out of love. And that can be a very difficult situation. Probably the worst kind of relationship is the one where you're lonely in it.
I agree.
That is something that is a killer.
Please let us know in the comments below what questions you would want us to answer in the future. And if you want to find out more, make sure to check out councilforhumandevelopment.org. And please share the podcast with your friends on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter with the hashtag Council for Human Development.